This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Hey everybody, Zach Brittle here. I'm with Laura Heck. Thank you for listening to Marriage Therapy Radio. Today, we're talking about men. Last week, we talked about women and some of the burdens that they carry or are assumed to carry. And this week, we want to talk a little bit about what happens when that energy shifts toward kind of the male part of a heterosexual relationship. We talk a bit about emotional intelligence. John Gottman suggests that the secret to a happy marriage is an emotionally intelligent husband. But what does that even mean? And how do you make it work? It's a cool conversation, as always. Stick around.
Did I tell you about your face?
What about it?
Not your face, but your face. It's like just now when I said stop talking, because we were going to try and go ahead and just let all your brilliance shine on the podcast. And then you were like, you stop talking. And I wasn't even stop talking. Then what you're supposed to say is your face stop talking. That's what happens in our house. And then
it's very mature.
Well, me and Mary do it. It's like, she'll say, can you put that in the dishwasher? I said, you put it in the dishwasher. She says, your face puts it in the dishwasher. And that's how we end all our arguments.
That's your fight.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, okay, I'll just say that I think that when you have humor like that between two people, actually I have clients right now and they listen to the podcast, but I think that they just started listening. So it's going to take a while for them to get to this episode, probably many months, but they use humor so well in their relationship. It's such a playful relationship, but there's this line. And the moment it crosses the line, it is an absolute firestorm. And it's really interesting. And that's actually one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this particular topic that I'm bringing up today. But it's really funny how humor can cross the line. It's like one person's having a great time. They're like, your face puts in the dishwasher. And this is going to happen with your daughters where they're going to like burst into tears. And you're like, what did I say? We play this game every day. Why is it all of a sudden hurting your feelings?
Isn't it creepy when people listen to the podcast and then like somehow they enter your world and they're like, oh yeah, I heard that you were going to go to, you know, so-and-so. And I was like, wait, what? You know? And then I have clients and it's weird because she listens like religiously and he doesn't listen at all.
Yeah.
She's like, oh yeah, I remember that you said this because, and he's like, what? And it's kind of weird.
It's almost like misalignment, right? Like when you meet with one client over and over and over, and then all of a sudden you bring their partner in and they're like, I feel like I'm not supposed to be in the room. Like this feels a little too intimate for me.
The other thing that happens to me is like, I'm sure you've heard this before, but this is how I'm thinking about this right now. She's like, oh yeah. Like that time you wanted to take your daughter to Mars. And I'm like, God, how many times have I told that story?
You're like, all my material's used up on the podcast. I have nothing else left to teach.
Yeah.
I had this one where, you know how I was playing with my tiny hand with a couple episodes ago, I took a picture of the tiny hand scratching my dog's butt and I put it on Instagram because I'm mature like that. And I got a comment. He was like, I heard about this on the podcast. It's so good to see a picture. I laughed so hard. I was like, oh gosh.
Jeez.
No, because here's the truth. The truth is that we are celebrities. We are people that I say this with tongue in. Hey, but we might be after this Condé Nast thing. If that happens, we're going to be like,
return our emails.
Yeah.
So I sent them 15 emails. I got no response.
Okay. I wanted to talk to you about that.
But okay. You can talk to me about that, but listen, you know where I am kind of a celebrity is when I do, the ASLs in Seattle. People are like, oh yeah, I love your podcast. I think I told you about this.
So. Yeah.
But that's,
they come
that's
up to you like, and they're like, you do have nice hair. Like, yeah, I do.
That's kind of like preaching to the choir though. That's like your built-in audience right there. Mm-hmm. The people who are already seeking couples advice, but
anyway. Yeah. They're already in. So guys, this is what ended up happening. We had this meeting with Condé Nast, and Condé Nast is responsible for like Vanity Fair and what?
I don't know if you should tell this whole story. You should just say okay. We had a meeting with a media company.
That's and it. With a media company. It's a big one. And they're looking for talent, and we're talented. And the funny part was that Zach works late at night. He's a night owl, and he gets on things. And when he gets on them, he doesn't let them go until they process through.
Yeah,
and I go to bed and I wake up and there's like 4 new emails in my inbox. And it's like, and this one other one thing and this other thing. And he just keeps sending. And it's not like he's sending me the emails. He's sending Condé Nast the emails. And I was like, stop it, Zach. You were going to weird them out.
Well, I just wanted to be of help. And
you were so helpful.
Yeah. We'll find out, I guess.
If we haven't heard back. They haven't
We're
responded
like, not
to
this guy. We don't want the manic guy.
Uh-huh. We'll take the blonde.
No, here's what's going to happen. They're going to reply, and we're going to be doing the podcast one day, and you're going to be like, yeah, so I'm going down to Condé Nast on Friday. And I'm going to be like, what? Wait, hold on. How's that happening?
What happened? Well, they found a replacement. His name's also Zach, but he doesn't email at midnight 4 times.
Yeah.
All right. Here's what I want to talk
about.
Rebecca
gets the same emails though. She gets like 5 emails in the morning and she's like, Jesus, what am I going to do today? You know,
you're like, what were you doing last night? Stop drinking your Red Bulls or your Diet Cokes. Hey, how's that going?
I have about 1 Diet Coke a day.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Usually it's first thing in the morning though. So that's kind of,
that's fine. You don't drink coffee. So it's like your coffee. Okay. So the last time we had our podcast, the last episode, I was talking about how women in particular carry this burden. I want to find another word, but it does feel like a burden at times.
What do people carry? People carry suitcases. They carry baggage. They carry bags. They carry.
They carry no, you had a really great word. It was the privilege. They carry the privilege of the relationship.
Yeah.
Does that not feel about right? But really it does. Yeah, it can feel like a burden.
It's something about stewardship, right? They're stewarding. They feel like they have more. I don't know. You get that. I understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah. So that was the last episode, and kind of a gender difference in heterosexual relationships between, you know, women being the relationship stewards. And I thought, you know what, I want to talk about men and what men carry, because there is almost this misunderstanding and also this expectation that we have for men. And I wanted to dive into that because if women are going to be the ones who are more vocal about their complaints in relationships or their wants and their needs, and we know that to be true, then how can we give some voice to what we know men need? And maybe what their expectations are or what they're feeling is what they're carrying unnecessarily with the stewardship in their wheelhouse as men.
Yeah. Well, I think obviously this is problematic because you can't just put men in a category or women in a category, or you have to sort of separate out. But there are a lot of stereotypes and myths that I think that go with men. Like, do you know that... what is the statistic? It's pretty fascinating. 80% of people depicted in diarrhea commercials are men. It's true. This is a true fact.
It's probably because men eat shitty food.
No, it's because men are allowed to look ridiculous. It's why all the dads on TV are so dumb and bumbling. And there's no like really great, well, there's not none, but the dads are the idiots, right? And so there's a lot of like kind of myths and stereotypes around men that I think position us to kind of have to step it up a little bit more. And I'm realizing what I'm saying right now is somehow like I'm whining about being a white heterosexual cisgender man in America right now, middle class, you know, I'm specifically talking about relationships. Like, what is it that we need to transcend in order to be better partners? I think is the question, even if it's not real, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think you mentioned something like men are supposed to be handy or something. Like, I'm not handy. Does that make me less of a man? Or like, what, how can I transcend that in order to be a better partner? Kind of.
Well, that's been a really tough one. I got on this interesting topic yesterday talking about,
although I did make my planters. Did you see my planters?
Yes. You rocked that.
I know. Yeah.
Anyway. You crushed it. So when I met my husband, I like lusted after him. I don't know. I probably didn't. Anyway, I didn't know what I was marrying.
He's handsome.
He is handsome. Absolutely. But we fell in love on a friendship level. And then it was just like, we were just hanging out and we just never stopped hanging out. It wasn't, I think lust is probably a bad way to put it. But one of the things that I noticed is that some of my girlfriends have these husbands and they're super handy. I mean, they have like power tools and belts that they wear, and they're like the, what are those sexy twins that like rehab houses? Oh, anyway, yeah.
What are those guys called?
I don't know. Sexy twins. That's what I'm calling them. And there are definitely moments where I'm like, I wish you were more handy. I really do. And so what Property he has Brothers. Done is Property Brothers. Yes. He has, I've had dreams about them too, but dreams in particular. Okay.
That's
anyway.
Good.
Yeah. But I've wished that he was more handy. And he has said to me, well, I wish you were more handy. And the moment he said that to me, I remember being like, what do you mean you wish I was more handy? I'm a woman. Like, what do you expect of me? And I remember he pushed back and he was like, what do you expect of me? Like, why do you, I make money so I can pay for people to come over and be handy.
Yeah.
But if you're going to expect that I'm handy, why can't I expect that you know, hang things on the wall and drill, make planter boxes? And that pushback, I mean, I had one of those blow your brains out moments where I was like, you're so right. Why am I expecting this of you, of a 2019 man? Anyway, yeah, there's an expectation there. And I really had to turn it around, because there's times where I will literally like wait for him to get home on a business trip to fix a toilet. And he'll say, I don't know why you waited. You know, you're going to be doing this yourself, right? it broke on your clock.
You know what Ryan is? He's not handy. He's dandy.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
He is dandy.
Yeah.
He's my dandy boy.
I mean, again, it's just one of those things that we sort of get set up to have this identity that maybe isn't accurate, you know? And it's like... what is it like, men don't ask for directions or something? Like, that's kind of the thing I was, I think it kind of sparked you when I was talking about that guy in my office who was finally asking for what he needed. Like,
right.
for us to ask for what we need is a weakness of some sort. Like, I don't think so. I think you got to learn how to ask for what you need. The real trick is learning how to ask for what you need, you know?
Right.
And
not,
you know, there's a big difference between demand and desire. And I think if men in particular are using sort of power to ask for what they need or take what they need, then that's not how to be effective in a partnership, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The other one that I'm finding is, like that men shouldn't get, angry, or they shouldn't have like these emotions of like anger or sadness or irritability. Like, it's not okay. Sort of like, it's dismissing, right? Like you can't be angry. Like, we need to teach the anger out of boys, little boys. And the truth is, like, anger is one of the crayons of emotions. It's one of the colors. It is red and there's all the different hues. We've talked about that, but I find that like a lot of men are like, it's unacceptable for me to be angry. I'm like, why? Why can't you be angry? I get to be angry all the time.
Yeah.
Watch me.
Well, again, it comes down to how you're angry. As you were saying that, I was thinking about men don't cry. Like,
right.
Yeah. And you're too young for this, but remember, men don't eat quiche.
I'm definitely too young. I don't remember that at all. Did they eat kale?
I just remember I must have been in the seventh or eighth grade when my dad came home with this book called Men Don't Eat Quiche. I'm gonna have to check it out again. But again, just kind of this idea that's off topic. Just as a more of a memory. But the But just this idea that somehow, again, being emotionally available isn't okay when actually it's really required. And learning how to help men be emotionally available is one of my favorite things to do in my office.
Okay. So how would you coach a man to be emotionally available?
Well, I think a lot of times I'll just kind of go right at him and be like, hey, so what just happened right there? Cause he'll open his mouth and then he'll stop or something, or he'll, you know, and I go, what's going on? What's happening right now? And he'll say, I'm just feeling like this. And I go, okay, well, tell me more about that. You know? And I think, at the bottom of it, and this goes back to the hues, like the hues of red, it's just giving them more language, right? I think language is the way to help people understand what you're feeling. And it's kind of back to, well, not kind of back to, but that whole premise of raising emotionally intelligent kids is giving them words to identify their emotions. And I think a lot of people don't actually have words. So you have to give them to them.
If I was to, I think we talked about this before, but I think that the book Emotional Intelligence is a cool book, but I don't think that it's super helpful as far as like a guide to teaching. I like the program, you know, Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child, where you're teaching children how to be emotionally intelligent. And I just wish that there was a program out there, and I keep saying this, so maybe I should just build it, of raising, you know, or having an emotionally intelligent marriage, or having an emotionally intelligent husband or wife or whatever it might be.
Should we talk about that for a second? Because John, it's one of the quotes in John's in Seven Habits is that the key to any successful marriage is an emotionally intelligent husband.
Right.
And maybe you don't know what that means, but I mean, maybe people who are listening don't know what that means. Like, do you want to talk about that?
Yes. Yeah, please.
Me?
Yeah, absolutely. You're teeing it up. You're aware of it.
Well, the simplest way to put it is that emotional intelligence is actually an intelligence quotient. It's called EQ, which is separate. It's different. It's like IQ, but different in part because IQ is meant to be flat. You can't change it in theory. If your IQ is 110, then your IQ is 110 forever. But EQ is different, and it's measured on four different kind of,
quadrants,
not quadrants, but just skills. And one is, it's self-awareness, and then it's self-management, and then it's other awareness, like awareness of other people's feelings, and then relationship management. So typically we are stronger or weaker in any one of those four. And in order to be emotionally intelligent, the design is to build up your skills in all four of those areas. And so for me, in my office, it often begins with awareness, right? Self-awareness. What are you feeling? And what is your partner feeling? Like, it's amazing to me that when sometimes particularly a woman will start to cry and a man will not be able to handle her tears.
Can't be there. I had this experience.
I'm like, hey man, it's look at your wife's face. What's she feeling right now? Sad. What else? Disappointed. Yep. What else? You know, and just to have people begin to turn their faces toward their partners and say, oh, I see what you're feeling. I see what you're doing. That's other awareness. Right. And then of course you have the, this idea of self-management is I'm aware that I'm angry. Now I have to choose how I'm going to be angry, you know? I'm aware that you're crying. Now I'm going to have to choose what am I going to do about the fact that you're crying?
I had this, this moment with a couple where wife burst into tears, and just the same exact experience of what you said was like, he couldn't handle her emotion. And so what he does is he starts dismissing it, right? Like, it's like, okay, this emotion is too much for me. I don't like it. I don't know what to do with it. I don't understand it. And it's causing emotion in me that I don't understand and I don't like. And so his MO is to dismiss it by rolling his eyes, by blowing her off, by, you know, being like, why are you like this? Why is this such a, you know, what is this all about? Trying to kind of tamper it down. And what does that do for her? Of course, that just escalates it further because she feels invalidated and she feels like, why can't you just be in this emotion with me? And so slowing it down a little bit, we got to the point where he was able to say, I want to be here with you. I want to like, I want to empathize with you or whatever it is, but just so you know, when you cry, it scares the shit out of me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to do with that. And I was like, this is perfect. Just mm-hmm. expressing that one little moment of like, I want to be present with you. I want to be there for you. And at the same time, I just don't know how, because this is what's going on for me. And I told him that is such a great start. Just being able to express that one little bit, tiny bit of information, letting your partner know. And it softened everything. Just that little bit of conversation. I remember actually going back to our business partner, and I'll call him by name, but when Sean lost his mom, I remember a lot of people, he was sharing with us, you know, a lot of things that people say when you lose someone. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I've always had a really hard time with just the phrase, I'm sorry for your loss. It feels very disingenuous to me and kind of clunky. And I said, I want Sean to say the right things. I want to provide empathy. I want you to know that I care about you and you're in my thoughts. And I just don't know how to express that because I have no idea what's going on for you. I can't join you where you're at. And he said, just you saying that to me is you reaching across the line of just saying, I don't know what to say to you in this moment. I don't know how to provide comfort, but I want you to know that you're on my mind and that I can't even imagine what you're going through. And he said, that was perfect. Just that.
It is. I mean, and I think that people, I want to disabuse the thought that somehow you have to master emotional language, you know, like, again, last time we were talking a little bit about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, like what you kind of offered him was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And because he wasn't expecting anything, it really satisfied, you know, it really kind of met him exactly where he needed to be met. And I think men in particular, if they feel like, well, I'm never going to be touchy feely, or I'm never going to have all the words that you want, or I'm never going to be able to, then start simple. Just be like, I'm not sure what to say here. I know something. I know I'm supposed to say something, but maybe I can just be sit next to you. Because the movement is the connection is the thing that matters, you know? And I think this, you know, if we go kind of back to the top of the podcast, this training that we have to be idiots and to not know what we're doing and we're excused by all these sitcom dads, it's not serving us. It's not serving people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So I would say if there was like a take home, it might be just sort of like take an inventory of what your expectations are, what your inner expectations are for your spouse and how that might be tied to some sort of script that your partner didn't write, but was written for them and how we might be not necessarily giving our partner what they need, because we are basing it off of this script. So
we didn't even touch parenting, like the kind of the script that moms play this role in, as a parent, and dads play that role as a parent. I mean, again, that's often scripted sometimes by our own families, but again, just by what's around us. And I think you get to write your own. You get to be as present and as, you know, engaged as a parent as you get to be. I'll tell you about this one couple who, he works outside the home. Mm-hmm. She works inside the home with the baby. Mm-hmm. He comes home and he's like, I'm tired from work. I gotta rest, you know? And I'm like, how much do you work? And he's like, I don't know, 50 hours a week. I go, okay, 50 hours. I'm gonna give you 50 hours. How much does your wife work? He goes, not at all. I go, really? Because she gets up at like an hour before you and she doesn't stop parenting until you're like into your second cocktail. I think she works like 98 hours a week, you know? And he was like, oh damn. And so now he cleans the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I come home and the kitchen's a mess. And I'm like, clean it. Anyway, I think I told you about that.
That's awesome. So if I was to have like a little conversation with you before coming in on the first session, I was like, Zach, can you just tell my husband to like start building some shit around the house? Would you just align with me? And then next time you see him be like, hey, Ryan, I'm going to need you to just step your game up a little bit. Your wife's going to need you to build some stuff.
I would first make Ryan dig his own grave. I would not do it because you somehow planted the seed. I would walk him into a trap and then be like, yeah, so maybe you ought to build some stuff.
Yeah, man, that's a sign of a good therapist is if they trap you, they trap you into it.
Yeah.
Hey, I have one question for you because I'm still picking Almond Joy out of my teeth. What is your favorite Halloween candy? What's the first to go? Like, what do you start picking out of your candy? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Butterfinger's good because it sticks to your teeth. Like, well, you can.
Here's what was interesting about Butterfinger is this year they had an advertising slogan that was Butterfinger's better than ever. And I'm like, did they change it? Because I'm pretty sure
33% more butter.
I don't know.
All right. Well, I think my favorite is probably Twix, in case you were wondering.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just share that with you.
There's a lot of, you got a lot of variety in Twix.
The peanut butter Twix are my favorite.
Oh, no. You got to go with the original caramel. Twix had this great ad campaign as well. It was a couple years ago, but it was this kid. It was this guy. This old man was walking down the street and he dropped his Twix bar. And this kid picked it up and goes, sir, you dropped your Twix bar. And of course, their thing is there's always two in the package, right?
Yeah.
And so you're primed for him to share it. And the old man looks right at the little kid and he goes, you deserve a reward. Yes, you do. And then he turns around and walks away.
Zach, I think you have the memory of an elephant. I don't know how you remember all of this. You should have been in marketing, to be perfectly honest, because you remember jingles. You remember commercials.
Patton Oswalt. Okay. Patton Oswalt is a comedian and he has this bit that he does where he goes, Oarsman Dodge. And he sings this whole like Dodge commercial from his childhood. And then he sings another one from another car place. And he goes, that's just in my head. It's in my head forever. And then the next
that's
line, he goes, I've taken two infant CPR classes and I can't remember whether to press on her chest first or breathe in her mouth first. Like, can I just swap out this car commercials for anyway?
But everything just needs to be tied to a jingle because you remember it. And that's why, that's how they teach kids. That's why they get to know the ABCs.
You can.
True fact, if you were to say, Laura, what comes before and after the letter O? I would be like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, F, I do. I know I'm not the only one. I am smart in some areas, but the alphabet is not something that I have an expertise in.
Hey, speaking of the alphabet, if you're looking for a good relationship guide, the relationship alphabet is on sale at Amazon.com. We got to go, man. This has been too long.
All right. Adios. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. Man, I'm still in giggles after doing that episode with Zach. But I just had to say, if you're interested or you thought this was interesting talking about emotional intelligence, we actually cover this in our Marriage in Motion course. Many of you have already purchased the course. And if you haven't, you can check it out by going to marriagetherapyradio.com. There's a tab up at the top and it says Marriage in Motion. It is a 16-week video series course where you actually get to see our faces, shiny and bright. And then it's linked with some activity sheets. And each course, each lesson is about 20 minutes. But you know what? You just go check it out. It's less than $300. I think you're going to find a lot of value in it. Thanks so much for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.